welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves. My guest on this week's Listen to Older Voices is 67-year-old Gary Fletcher. Gary started his working career with the Board of Works, with his first job as an apprentice helping with the construction of the Upper Yarra Dam in Victoria. By the age of 21, he'd started his own trucking business, eventually selling that business and gaining a contract to build roads in Papua New Guinea. In this part one of a two-part show, Gary focuses on the stories involving primarily the trucking business. Gary, where I'd like to start is to ask you when you were born and where you were born.
23rd of August 1937 at Warburton.
What are your earliest memories then?
Oh, when I was a kid in primary school at Warburton.
Mm-hmm. What can you actually remember?
Oh, my early days, my father built a home in Warburton in 1939. I was born in 37 and we'd been burnt out. My father was in the Mallee prior to our being born and he went bankrupt trying to grow wheat on the droughts, and he came to Warburton in 1932, I think. He built our home there, and my brother was 4 years older than me. He died 5 years ago, and we all went to school at Warburton. We all went to high school at Warburton. It was the SDA school there, and my brother became a printer. And then he did journalism. I went to the Upper Yarra Dam, served an apprenticeship as a mechanic, and I was there from 1952 to 1957. And then I started in the trucking business in 1958.
Okay, well, I think that's a big jump from when you were born to 1958. So what I'd like to do is to take you back a bit and then bring us back to 58 and talk a bit about the trucking. Back to the early days. What did Dad do when he moved to Warburton?
Oh, my father worked at the Science Publishing Company, but he'd also was in the Country Fire Authority, and everything got burnt out in our property in 1939 fires. Mm-hmm. You know, that was rather terrifying. And then when the dam started, my father worked at the Upper Yarra Dam, but before that he'd gone broke in the Mallee. He got a soldier. He went to the First World War.
So a soldier settlement, was he?
Yes, and he went there after the First World War ended, you know, and
So he would have been up there during the Depression years.
He was there from 1920 to 1931.
Right.
And he lost everything.
Yes.
His deferred pay went up in buying wheat grain and everything else to try and grow it. And he just had drought after drought after drought, and it just burned him out. He came out of there bankrupt, on the verge, and he started working in Warburton, cleared the land. It was a timber block that Dad had, and he built the home there that still stands there. We were there all our lives, all our young lives.
And Mum stayed home and looked after you?
Yes,
they did.
My mother did, yes.
Right. What about school? Did you enjoy going to primary school?
Oh, yes. I was, my friend that now lives in Mildura, we were rebels, the usual, wagging us from school, defying authority, you know, like the usual. I don't think any other kids are different. And, yes, we used to go out on the log trucks, and that's when I learnt to drive.
Right.
Yes, the log truck drivers took us up the Big River and Matlock and all those places, you know, and they used to let us drive the trucks and things, you know.
Wow.
We were 10 and 12 years of age.
And they had big trucks.
Yes, log trucks, yes, pulling jinkers.
Yeah. Know. So that was quite adventurous for a young boy.
Oh, it was, yes. It was much better than school.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I was going to ask you what you did for fun, but it sounds as though that was your fun. Was
yes, it was.
Really.
And, you know, they tried to get me to play football, but I didn't like the game very much. And at the Upper Yarra Dam, while the Upper Yarra Dam was being built by the Melbourne and Metropolitan Board of Works, we were apprentices. There was about seven of us there, and they had the buses running. Harry Marta owned the bus services in those days. They still operate, but Harry Marta had a big fleet of buses, and the Board of Works paid him to run the buses from Yarra Junction to the Upper Yarra Dam and back every day, because quite a lot of the men lived in those regions, you know, and I used to catch the bus in Warburton and go to the Up Yarra Dam, and there was over 1,200 men employed there that actually lived there.
So that was your first job then, really?
Yes, it was my first job.
What an amazing first job to be part of.
Yes, it was a very good training, and there was outstanding mechanics came from Germany and England. There was they purchased a number of Rolls-Royce engines, 350 horsepower Rolls-Royce engines that were installed into some of the dump trucks that they were having troubles with, and they brought out some Rolls-Royce engineers to install them. And I met them and worked with them.
Oh, terrific training.
A Scottish man by the name of Hugh Jolly taught me my trade, and he was an extremely clever man.
Amazing.
Same things happened as it was interesting from a point of view of... there was a lot of... sort of, not friction, but there was some disagreements between the Australians and some of the Rolls-Royce men, you see. And this Scotsman, who had a very broad accent, and I got used to his accent quickly and picked it up, you know, and they all made a remark that Hugh Jolly didn't know what he was talking about, and they were exaggerating and making derogatory remarks, and he said... I said, well, it's funny, isn't it? Every time somebody's got a problem with another machine, they come and ask Hugh Jolly what the problem might be, and he gives them the answers. That got me a smack across the mouth from one of the men that disagreed with me.
Yes,
you know?
Of course it would.
And Hugh Jolly would always answer the questions. He never had to go to a workshop manual
right.
to name a part or explain something. He'd tell the man what to do and then show him how to do it. And he was a brilliant man. And, of course, I was very fortunate in having him train me.
Absolutely.
Of course.
So how long did you stay there for?
5 years. 1952 till 1950. January 1952 till January 1957. That's when the dam was finished.
And by then you'd built up quite a bit of experience yourself then.
Very much so, yes. Now I'm 67 years of age and I've never left my profession.
That says something.
Yes.
It does. So 57, you left there and you started in your trucking business in 58.
Yes.
So did one follow directly from the other?
I went to the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology for about 10 months and did night training there, yes.
In what?
In mechanical engineering.
Okay. Why did you do that, given you just had 5 years' experience?
The training was to give you the experience that you needed, the practical experience, but I needed some of the theory as well, you know.
Yes.
That's what it was for. I did night school. I worked at night school at Royal Melbourne.
While you were working during the day?
Yes.
Okay.
For the Board of Works.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
In South Melbourne.
So how did you get into the trucking business?
After everything had been finalised, I saved up enough money and I purchased a repossessed truck. Mm-hmm. From a finance company, and they financed me into it. And I had a logging contract up in Benalla and started cutting red gum logs and everything else. Then I got into the interstate work in the same year, cutting for... It was then called Edmund T. Lennon. It's now called Brambles.
Oh, okay. Mm. They've certainly grown.
Haven't they? You know, started running all over the place. I got an excellent job with quite a few of the companies that operated out of Sydney and Melbourne, and did very, very well with them. You know, May and Nicholas were very good to me too, and so were TNT. And in the end, I finished up with a large fleet of trucks. It was quite interesting. And employing those men that drive those trucks all over Australia, they're a unique breed of people, totally apart from the average Australian 40 hours a week man, you know. They work 40 hours a day sometimes.
Well, that's actually a very interesting thing you're putting up there. I mean, so I'd like to come back and look at your role as somebody who managed and owned a large trucking company. But first of all, you actually drove trucks for quite a while. So talking to you as a truck driver, the only information and news we seem to get these days when it comes to truck drivers is always very negative. They're always supposedly on drugs. They're always breaking this law and that law. Is it a very difficult and demanding job?
It does require experience, of course. To get that experience, it would be advisable to take lessons on driving trucks locally, in a local, not in a difficult place, but like in a, in a large country town like Shepparton or Benalla or somewhere like that, right, being locally in Victoria, and be trained by older men that know how to do it. And it's not difficult at all, but it does require training and a lot of it. It's like flying an aeroplane. I mean, if you've got to be trained properly. Mm-hmm.
And, what did you find was the most challenging thing as a driver?
Oh, well, I never drove for anyone else. I always had my own trucks, you know, mm-hmm. and being the owner of them makes sure you look after them of everything. But, of course, the most important thing is to have a very roadworthy vehicle. Assuming that that's all okay, you do need the proper training. And an articulated vehicle, and especially if you're going to go towing more than one trailer from, say, Brisbane to Darwin, which was what I did quite a lot of, you'd take out one trailer as far as Toowoomba, and that was as far east as you were allowed to have multiple trailers.
Oh, right, okay.
And then you'd bring up another two or three and hook them all behind the one prime mover and go to Darwin with them. But you've got to know where the routes to take, it's no just a bit late after you've got a street directory that tells you you're in the wrong street. You're not going to turn around three trailers somewhere else, are you? And you're in a blind street, aren't you? That's going to be very interesting.
Mm.
And, of course, it's you cannot get that experience readily, and I don't think, even if you were trained in a capital city, the experience is best practiced in the country areas and getting out where you're in the... And with a driver that knows the roads, and he's an extremely experienced man, they're not always men that can teach you. They're men that can do it, but they couldn't teach you. A person like myself that's done a lot of training for people, it's better to get somebody like myself that knows how to do it and tells you what to do before you get into difficulties.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
What are the major dangers you face as an interstate truck driver?
Going around corners.
Yeah?
Yes. Getting on a road you don't know, if it's a place to take a delivery, and checking up on that road first. Because, once you make a... You can't bring a semi-trailer down this one-way street, can you? It's not a... And you certainly won't turn it around here.
Oh, no.
And this is the sort of things that can happen to people, and they get into difficulties. And when you've got you're up around 140-odd ton, you're not talking about, peanuts. It's a job that you've got to know. And the most important thing is proper food, regular meals, and practice hygiene, personal hygiene. You've got to be also a non-drinker, and it is also very advisable to be a non-smoker.
Why is that?
Because you may not know this, but if you drink alcohol, quite apart from the fact that it increases your blood pressure, it also puts you to sleep. And you can be sitting up there cruising along at 100 kilometres an hour, and you've only got to drop off for a few seconds and you've lost control of that thing. And kill 10 people as well if you want to. It's too easy to get into difficulties. And it's a good idea to make sure that you eat 3 meals a day at the correct times. Having just a bite to eat and then a cigarette to keep you awake isn't going to work.
Mm. What about car drivers? Do they cause much of a problem for truckies?
Oh, well, yes, they do. But not on... Today they've got... The freeways are a lot better, but there are in capital cities, cars are always a bit of a problem, but they're not all by any means, but there are the odd one or two that, you don't get yourself into a predicament where you're going to, a person doesn't give way to you when they should. You've got to be aware of the possibility and take the precautions before it happens. So you know that that bloke coming into that street hasn't seen you, doesn't want to stop, and he's going to come flying straight across the road in front of you. So you take action accordingly. You lift your foot off the accelerator. You ease all the brakes on. You've got 3 trailers or 2 trailers or just 1, Just ease the brakes on and just let him go screaming across in front of you and do what he has to do, You're not going to stop mad drivers.
No.
They're not going to be around for hundreds of years to come, I dare say. But it is an experience. Just predicaments like this can happen. I unfortunately had the misfortune, one of my drivers was crossing a Botany Road in Sydney. He had my driver had the green lights, and a couple of young drunk lads in an MG. It was a TCMG. You might remember the car. It's an English sports car. And they went straight underneath the trailer, and it cut both their heads clean off.
Oh, gee.
I'm not exaggerating.
How traumatic for the driver.
Oh, well, the driver was totally in the right, but the thing is that he had to stop work for a couple of weeks,
course.
You know. I mean, he's just killed two young men, and, I mean, nobody wants that.
No, even if you're in the right, it's still an awful thing to witness.
Well, the police that investigated it, they rang me up. I was fortunately in Sydney at the time. Not fortunate, it was just I happened to be in Sydney, and my driver that was... They went against a red light and went straight underneath his trailer.
Yeah.
And the police, you know, wanted all the details, and, of course, they said... The police have to know who the owner of the vehicles are and all this sort of jazz. And of course, fortunately, my driver said, "Look, my boss is already here in Sydney. He's the owner of the trucks." He said, "We'll ring him and get him to come around." And I drove around straight away. It was on Rickety Street, Mascot. It was, and they crossed over. I forget the road now. Botany Road. That's right. And of course, bang, went through the red lights and killed them. And at the inquest, I attended the inquest, and of course, so did my driver. And it was the magistrate exonerated my driver from any blame whatsoever. The father of one of the young lads, who I felt very sorry for, made out that my driver could have stopped the truck before he went through the green light. And the magistrate said, "Mr. King, you're the father of the unfortunate deceased," he said, "would you like to read the police report?" The clerk of the court took it and gave it to the father, who was the father of the kid that was killed, that was driving the car. And he had the highest blood alcohol level that you could get and still remain conscious. And the same applied to the passenger, of course, but this was it was just damning. Yeah. The young bloke that was killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the magistrate was ever so polite to say that, you know, that this tragedy could have been avoided if they had not been drinking. And because he had... Or driving, yes. And because he said, you know, it's... Mm. And then, fortunately, the police sergeant, who was the investigating police officer, he got up and laid it right on the line. And He didn't mince his words with anybody. He just said exactly who was in the wrong, what was caused in them, and the driver of the truck was acting in absolutely the most perfectly legal manner possible. Mm. He said, you know, what was really a... Yeah.
Well, that was a really awful experience, but what was it that you enjoyed most about it, driving? There must have been some good things about it.
Well, I don't know about enjoying it. It was earning a living, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exceedingly long hours, hard work. And, yes, it can be rather exciting. And you get some experiences that, for example, I don't think, you know, a fellow who I got to know quite well who taught me to fly a tiger moth just by being in the transport industry, you see. And,
right.
I did that in Benalla, and he used to be the man who... His name was Fred Hoynville, and he did all the skywriting over Melbourne.
I remember that.
But he used to go to Benalla on weekends with his Tiger Moth training people to fly aircraft.
Right.
And that's when I learned to fly, with Fred Hoynville, and his wife also used to fly. And unfortunately, it was only in the early 60s that he got killed in a glider near Goulburn. He was a great man for experimenting with flying. He flew gliders and he designed aircraft, and he was a clever man, not just a good pilot. He was a man that was, and I think, if memory serves me, that he was a pilot in the Second World War. He wasn't a young man when he got killed. He was in his 50s.
Right.
But it was in 59 or 60 when he got killed, yes. But a very nice man.
Mm.
Absolutely brilliant. And not only apart from that the people you meet in the transport industry are vast and varied. And it is really, you'd go in roadhouses, they were not popular in those days. They were not good ones, you know, like they are today, you know, where you can, yeah. And if you wanted to have a shower, which I've always been a person to have a two shower a day man where possible, you know, and especially if you're working long hours and hard work and everything else. And of course, the comedian that worked for me would, you know, oh, well, I think I'll go to so-and-so and have a shower. Oh, I've already had one. I said, oh, where did you have one? He said, I fell in the creek back there, you know.
Now, the comedian, what was his name?
Colin Hockey.
Colin Hockey.
Mm.
Now, before we started the interview, you told me a story, and I know it could be tedious going through it again, but please tell the story so I can record it about the experience you had with Colin and the police at the hotel.
Oh, that was at Gurley in... that was about 1963, I think it was, or 64, I'm not sure, but it was about that time. We stopped... Five of my trucks were all travelling together. I was driving one, Colin Hockey, the comedian, was driving another, and there were three other drivers coming along. We're all together. We were carting cargo to the Brisbane waterfront, and it was Ford Motor Company's products we were carrying from Geelong as well as Broadmeadows. And we got to the Gurley Hotel, which is about 29 miles or 30 miles something south of Moree in northern New South Wales. And we walked into the hotel and had a counter lunch. Now, no one was allowed to drink and drive. That's all there was to it. And the comedian would always say, no, I never drink and drive. He said, I always drink, then drive, you know. And of course, we'd had our lunch, and we walked out of the hotel, and there was a police car parked in front of the front truck. And I got hold of the driver and said, are your logbooks in order? You know, license is handy and everything like that. Like, you know, the police are watching us.
Yeah.
And Hockey walks up to the truck, towards the truck, and the police were watching us. And he put on a drunk act, and he could act exceedingly well. You would have been convinced beyond a shadow of doubt that he was drunk. And he's plapping his legs and wobbling from side to side, and he had the keys and he's rattling them around his fingers and trying to... And he said in a drunken stupor voice, he said, we'll go up to Brisbane now, fellas, won't we, eh? And of course, I nearly had a heart attack.
Oh,
I thought, oh my goodness, I could feel the sweat pouring in.
You could see the bars coming.
And the sergeant was the older of the two police officers, and Hockey walked towards his truck, and the sergeant stepped out of the police car and started to walk towards him, and he turned around to Colin Hockey and he said, you're not going to drive that vehicle, are you, sir? And Hockey's reply was, of course I'm going to drive it, I'm in that condition to walk, am I?
Oh, that went down well, I bet.
I thought, here we go, we're all going to get locked up, or at least he's going to get locked up, and oh, here am I with five trucks and
four drivers.
However, when I got to the police officer and talked to him, I said, he's just a comedian. I said, he's not a... Anyway, the senior police officer, who was far more the gentleman than the young fellow, who was obviously the understudy, that he looked at it to me as if he'd had a brand new uniform, and this is his first job as a police officer, you see, and naturally he'd be trained. But the sergeant listened to me,
yes,
and realised that this bloke was bunging on an act. Yes. And I said, I can assure you, sergeant, I said, he is not drunk, but of course, I said, you know, I said, he is a comedian. I said, and the public and inside the hotel will inform you that we have been here less than an hour and we didn't drink, because I don't drink, and I didn't allow my drivers to drink. And he had a smile on his face that indicated to me that he was fully aware of what my driver had been doing to, you know, taking the mickey out of the police, or, you know, making a joke out of them, you know. And anyway, the sergeant believed me and turned around to the young constable and said, that'll be all now, so-and-so, calling him by his name, you know. And he said, very well, sir. And he said, and he turned around to my driver. He was at this time a distance from my driver, but in a fairly loud voice, he said to my driver, oh, by the way, Mr. Hockey, giving him back his licence and his logbook, he said, interfering with the police in the course of their duty is a serious chargeable offence. Please leave. And Hockey jumped in the truck and shook hands with him and waved goodbye.
Look, it's really fortunate that you do have those experienced police around, isn't it? Because, I mean, that could have got nasty.
Oh, of course. They'd have locked him up.
Yeah.
Interfering with the police in the course of their duty. Of course it was.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, yourself if you just don't do as they tell you. I mean, like, when he turned around to Hockey and gave him back his logbook and his licence, he should have said, thank you very much, Sergeant, and with that, driven away. But no, he had to put on the drunk act, didn't he? Yeah. You know, and of course, you know, you're not going to drive that vehicle, are you, sir?
The jokes that Hockey put across one day was rather funny. He said, my wife and I, you know, we sleep in single beds now. And my secretary said, what do you mean you sleep in single beds? He said, oh, well, you're more comfortable, you know, and all that sort of thing, you know, and everything else. And he's making out this thing, and he's telling her this lovely story about sleeping in single beds. You know, it's much more comfortable and better, you know. And he said, but of course, he said, ours is a much better agreement. Our single beds are in separate rooms. And of course, he said, yes, he said, hers is in Perth and mine's in Sydney.
What a character.
He was... And in the glove box of that car, to give you an idea about the type of man, I'll show you a photo of him. The very look of the man divulges he's a comedian.
Doesn't it?
That's taken 35 or more years ago. And that's the type of man he was, you know.
He's got both of them, he's got that grin on, looks like
yeah,
he's up
to no good. Right. If he didn't have a grin on his face, it was because he was probably sick.
Join me on next week's show when Gary completes his story about his trucking adventures and moves into how he gained the contract for building roads in Papua New Guinea through the help of one of Prime Minister Robert Menzies' sons, and how his adventures there included being held up and having a homemade shotgun held to his head, which fortunately misfires. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.